It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. According to new findings from the nonprofit March of Dimes, 1 in 7 Wisconsin counties are childcare deserts, meaning they have no obstetric clinicians or birthing facilities.
The national figures are more stark, with more than 1 in 3 counties nationwide qualifying as a maternity desert. This comes as nearly 100 publicly reported labor and delivery units closed nationally from January of 2024 to May of 2026. Again, that's according to March of Dimes.
The organization said the closure of rural hospitals is partly to blame for an increase in the amount of time it takes to drive to a hospital with a birthing facility. They found several Wisconsin counties saw jumps in travel time after the closure of several hospitals over the past few years.
Overall, the nonprofit estimates nearly 40,000 women from age 15 to 44 years old live in maternity care deserts statewide.
Dr. Michael Warren is chief medical and health officer with March of Dimes, a nonprofit focused on the health of mothers and babies. Dr. Warren, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
As you say in your report, 1 in 7 Wisconsin counties considered maternity care deserts, according to the March of Dimes. What is leading to a lot of counties in Wisconsin and around the country having this lack of childcare delivery services?
Well, when we talk about maternity care deserts, we mean counties that have no obstetric clinician and no obstetric facility. So there's no midwife, no OBGYN or family physician who delivers babies, and there's no place to deliver a baby like a hospital or a birthing center. We've seen across the country that 1 in 3 counties are maternity care deserts, as you mentioned, 1 in 7 counties in Wisconsin. And the reasons for that vary. The most common reasons that bubble up are financial challenges that make it difficult for hospitals to remain viable financially and stay open. We also hear about workforce challenges, difficulties in recruiting obstetric clinicians to communities, particularly rural communities. And then we know that in some rural areas, there have been decreases in the birth volume and just fewer folks walking through the doors to deliver, and that really aggravates that financial problem that hospitals face to be able to see a high enough volume to bring in enough revenue to keep the doors open. And so it's a combination of those factors that's leading to this situation across the country.
What are the healthcare concerns if we have people, you know, having to travel to the next county or two counties over to get prenatal care and, of course, delivery?
I think a lot of times when people think about this issue, they think, well, this is just an inconvenience. People have to drive farther to get to care. And it is an inconvenience, but it's so much more than that. There is good research that shows that for women who live in maternity care deserts and have to drive farther to get care, they're less likely to get prenatal care, to get prenatal care early and all the care that they need. They're more likely to deliver their babies early or premature. And in fact, both the pregnant woman and her baby are more likely to die. And so this is not just an inconvenience. This is really a matter of life and death. And we often think about childbirth and the woman being able to get to a hospital in time to deliver her baby. But this has ramifications for obstetric emergencies as well. So, for example, pregnant women who are having complications either during pregnancy or in the postpartum period, this distance and this time really matters.
What kind of things do you think need to change to provide more access in these counties to prenatal and birth center services?
Addressing these challenges really requires us to tackle this problem from a variety of angles. Unfortunately, there is not one single solution. When I talked about the reasons why we see these deserts, we talked about financing and we talked about workforce. So it's important to start there. One thing we have to think about is the way that we finance childbirth. And for so long in this country, we have relied on a fee-for-service model where we pay based on unit volume, like we're paying for widgets. And so the more deliveries you do, the more you get paid. And that model might work well if you're getting reimbursed high enough to cover your costs. But it becomes particularly challenging if you're in an area where there are just fewer deliveries to be had. And if you're in a rural county, for example, where there's a smaller population, fewer births happening, you've got fewer folks coming in the door giving birth. But that doesn't mean that you can change the capacity that you have in the hospital. You've always got to have somebody on call to be able to deliver that baby. So you've got to have an OBGYN or a family physician or a midwife. You've got to have anesthesia available. You've got to have the nursing staff. And it's expensive to maintain that on-call capacity. So we have to think about how we finance labor and delivery and the associated costs for those in this country. We also hear from hospitals and providers that even when these services are paid for, the reimbursement is not enough, particularly for families who are on Medicaid. And so we've got to think about, at the state level, how much is being paid to hospitals and providers for those labor and delivery services. And then we've got to tackle this broader workforce issue. We know from projections from the federal government that we already have a shortage of OBGYNs. And if we project that out even another 10 years, the supply will not be sufficient to meet the demand. We know that we've seen an increasing number of deliveries attended by midwives. And so there's a tremendous opportunity to think about how we make sure that midwives are able to practice in states. And a number of states are tackling this from a policy standpoint, addressing licensure issues and the ability, for example, of midwives to practice independently and to be able to provide those services. And then we can't forget about family physicians. In many parts of the country, particularly in rural areas, family physicians are there and they can have the training to deliver babies and can play an important role in this process. But sometimes there are barriers with hospitals or healthcare systems that won't actually allow them to provide those services. And so we've got to address that as well to be able to make sure that they can actually practice and provide those services. It's really going to take us looking from all these angles, finance, reimbursement, and workforce to be able to move this forward.
That's interesting. And the idea that, okay, we're not going to be able to build a hospital with a delivery center in every county, but are there more things, and you mentioned midwives and family practitioners, for example, are there more ways we can provide at least some of these services in more communities?
Absolutely. We should really be thinking about an array of solutions to address this. We hear, for example, in some states that they're utilizing local public health departments to be able to provide prenatal care and postpartum checkups. We know that community health centers or federally qualified health centers are available in so many communities across the country. Those are vital service points because they see patients regardless of the ability to pay. And so we've really got to tap into all of those service opportunities. For places where we may not have brick and mortar facilities, we know that in parts of the country, folks are using mobile care delivery. So for example, here at March of Dimes, we've got mom and baby mobile health centers in states throughout the country that actually bring care to communities that otherwise wouldn't have it. And we can deliver prenatal care and postpartum care on those buses. Those services don't account for the delivery challenge. We've still got to make sure that women are connected to a hospital that provides labor and delivery, but we can piece together these various elements of the system to try to get better outcomes.
Dr. Warren, do you get the sense that policymakers and leaders in the healthcare world see this as a problem and see some urgency here to tackle some of those solutions you've been talking about?
Well, certainly we hear from hospital partners across the country that this is a very real challenge. In the last couple of years alone, we've seen nearly 100 hospitals close their labor and delivery units, and hospitals and health systems will talk about those challenges around finance and workforce. We know that there are policy solutions that can improve the situation, but can also make this situation more perilous. I think we are all really worried about the implications of HR 1, sometimes called the Big Beautiful Bill, that's going to reduce the amount of federal Medicaid funding flowing to states. And there is great concern that this is going to exacerbate this already challenging maternity care access situation. If there are fewer dollars flowing to states for Medicaid, states are going to have to grapple with how to deal with that, and they can either cover fewer people or pay less for the services they're providing. And either way, that's bad news for hospitals, particularly rural hospitals that see a disproportionate share of patients on Medicaid.
Dr. Warren, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Dr. Michael Warren, Chief Medical and Health Officer with March of Dimes, a nonprofit focused on the health of mothers and babies. For local impact, let's bring in Dr. Dennis Hartung. He's an obstetrician-gynecologist with Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin and St. Croix County. West of Eau Claire, their hospital expanded their OBGYN services over the last couple of years. Dr. Hartung, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
We've got this analysis from March of Dimes, one in seven Wisconsin counties seen as a maternal care desert that includes not the county you work in, but many in your part of the state. Is the birthing center in your hospital in Baldwin seeing more patients traveling further to seek maternal care?
We definitely do. Yeah, it's not uncommon to have an hour drive for many people, even for us to be their local closest hospital.
Now, what does that mean for things like, forget the actual childbirth itself, but the prenatal care appointments, right? People are wanting to go get those checkups to have the most successful pregnancy they can. How much of an obstacle do you see that being for your patients?
Yeah, it's definitely an obstacle at times. We're a rural area. Many people, you know, first of all, farm folks, they don't have a lot of time to spend an hour driving one way for an appointment that might only last 10 or 15 minutes and then another hour out of their day. That's tough on people, not to mention the finances of that gas cost. I will say there are occasional times when people can continue prenatal care closer to home with the plan to deliver at our facility, and that is helpful at times, but that's not a very common occurrence.
Is that maybe low-hanging fruit where hospitals like yours can coordinate with local providers to say, okay, you can do those sort of routine check-ins and we'll do the big event at the hospital?
Definitely so. We have tried to reach out and have a few connections like that in our area.
Now, we've seen a lot of health providers actually closing their natal wards, their birth centers, and things like that. Western Wisconsin Health, I understand, has moved in the opposite direction, trying to expand services to meet the need in the region that we're talking about. What has that looked like in practice? What has changed in the last couple of years?
Well, you mentioned closure, so I don't know the exact numbers, but roughly six hospitals in our area over the last 2 years have stopped doing birth within a 50-mile radius, to include, we're sort of a border city with Minnesota, and a hospital on the other side of the river in Minnesota has also stopped. So that has meant that those families, in order to find birth services, have begun to look, and Baldwin tends to be a central location that many of them have chosen. And we have a pretty good reputation for providing a good experience and respectful experience. So it has meant for growth, sometimes uncomfortably so.
What does that growth look like? How many more deliveries are you doing?
The year that I joined Western Wisconsin Health, we did 43 births the year before I joined. And this last year, we did 443
births. That's a
Someone
significant
said the math
difference.
On that is something like 1,000%. I don't know if that's accurate, but it's an exponential increase for sure.
Has that involved staffing up some or extra room in the ward or things like that? What does it take to increase your capacity like that?
Yes, good question. So when I first joined, we were in an older facility that the plan was to build new, and by the time I joined, the groundbreaking had already happened. And so within a year of my joining, we moved into the new facility, but very quickly realized we outgrew the four rooms that were set up for birth. And so a couple of years ago, we added on three more. So we have a total of seven rooms on our facility now, as far as space. And sometimes we even outgrow that and have to extend at least postpartum families to the rest of the hospital, where normally just medical and surgical patients are. But it also has meant that we've had to really staff up providers. We do have a fairly robust midwife service at our facility, as well as two obstetricians. And then nursing staff for sure has had to be ramped up to staff, 24/7 adequate nurses.
Well, it's interesting because, part of the reason other hospitals are closing their birthing centers is cost. What do you see when it comes to the way we fund our healthcare driving so many other places to dial back or close their birthing centers? What are the obstacles in doing something like this?
Good question. You know, if you just think about volume in, say, a bigger city, let's say St. Paul, one of our neighbor cities that we refer to when we have high risk, Number of hospitals there, number of providers that can provide care to a number of patients at one time, such that the volume of patients tends to outweigh the cost that it does to provide. But when you get into rural settings and numbers are lower as far as volume, you still need the same number of nurses. You still need the same level of care from a standpoint of obstetricians and anesthesia and nursing staff as you would whether you deliver 50 babies a day or whether you deliver one baby a day. You still need the same basic amount of things and the amount of facilities to be open in it. So it inherently costs more for a rural facility to stay open like that and pay competitive wages, for example, and so forth, compete with utilities and whatnot, just keep the building open. And so our facility has made it a goal and have the willpower and the directive to maintain this service. And you'd have to talk to my CEO. I mean, she's very creative about trying to manage the finances of all this to make this work. But we have a commitment to our community because we know how important it is.
I never thought of it that way. I guess there's an economy of scale here, basically, if you can do 400 births over the course of a year versus 40 in that one facility.
Yes, exactly. Basically have to have the same facility. It just, you know, more nurses and keep them trained. And, you know, the less numbers you do, the less comfortable nurses are at being ready for emergencies and so forth. So again, we felt like as we've increased, we felt like the nurses have gained more expertise and more comfort with obstetric emergencies, as have providers, such that everyone feels more comfortable in the setting where we are now, providing the care that we have at a community hospital level.
Looking ahead, it seems like you've made a lot of changes there over since you've been at Western Wisconsin Health. What do you see for the future? What are your hopes for the future of providing maternal care in your part of the state?
You know, the United States healthcare funding system is not the greatest system for access to everyone. And if you just look at other nations that have more of a universal healthcare benefit to its citizens, they offer different tiers. For example, Great Britain is a great example. They have hospital care, they have freestanding birthing centers, they have home birth care, all covered by the federal healthcare system, right? And we don't have that the same way in the United States. Some states have it kind of like that. Wisconsin does not. But I feel like moving ahead, both legislatively, culturally, and from a care model standpoint, it would be good when it comes to providing care for birthing families to have these levels of hospital care, freestanding birthing care, home birth care, all managed by, you know, a hospital group, so that you could provide the kind of care that's needed in the right place for the right cost. And that's my hope for the future for Wisconsin in our area. We hope to eventually be able to model something like that, but it's a long way in the future and it would require a lot of legislative change to make that happen.
Dr. Hartung, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Appreciate you asking me.
Dr. Dennis Hartung is an obstetrician gynecologist with Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin. Earlier, we heard from Dr. Michael Warren, Chief Medical and Health Officer with March of Dimes, a nonprofit focused on the health of mothers and babies, looking at concerns about maternity care deserts in counties around Wisconsin.